Well, hey, I'm going to start out with an exercise. Have you ever had a job evaluation or filled out like an online survey, tried to get a job? Have you ever had to do one of those where you fill out an answer and you have to give a scale like from 1 to 10, 0 to 10, and they say, okay, here's the scale, rate yourself with this, and you have to go through and do that. And almost universally, unless you're actually looking for a job and you're trying to sandbag it, we tend to rate ourselves tougher than we would rate someone else, especially someone else that we're particularly that we care about. And so, you know, we do this whole thing. So let me ask you a 1 to 10 question this morning, which is on a scale of 1 to 10, how adequate are you? Now, your response, if you're normal, would be, well, then that depends. What are you asking me that I'm adequate about? So let me ask it this way. Maybe is a better way to ask that question is, how frequently do you feel inadequate? See, because we spend our entire lives trying to prove our adequacy. I mean, social media exists and flourishes to show people the best side of us. It's even if it's quite honestly, we want to show everybody how bluntly honest we are about ourselves. I mean, we want to show something. And so every single person struggles with these feelings of inadequacy. And if we were to rate that scale, it would really vary depending on what we're talking about. Because we don't even live up to our own expectations, let alone other people's or God's expectations. So let me give you an example. We've been in this pandemic and isolation and shelter at home now for almost 2 weeks. So you've been closeted with two or three young kids, and you basically reached the point where you can't wait for them to go back to school. And when you hear the pitter-patter of their feet in the morning, it no longer fills you with great joy. And then you log on to Facebook and you see some other parent who's building the Eiffel Tower out of popsicle sticks, and their kids have advanced a full grade point average since they went on. And you think to yourself, what am I doing wrong? What is wrong with me as a parent? I just can't measure up. Or you've been working from home these last 2 weeks and you're beginning to have less and less to do. And even though your employer's paying you, you're sitting in front of your computer screen going, what's wrong? Why can't I seem to find enough to do? Am I really the employee I thought I was? And we could go on and on. We all struggle with these feelings of inadequacy. And if you're like me, sometimes you feel inadequate to help others, of knowing what to say, of inadequate to live well, inadequate to teach or to lead. Well, Jeremiah had these exact same issues. And he brought them up, actually. He brought them up with God. And how God answered him gives me, and I hope you, a lot of hope this morning. Because here's the main idea that I want to get across this morning is that God has appointed you to make a difference. God has appointed you to make a difference. He's called you into something that's bigger than yourself, and it really doesn't matter who you are, but when you follow Jesus, this is true of you. You have a purpose, and you get to make an impact that's bigger than you might imagine. And whether you feel inadequate or not does not change that truth. So let's dive in a little bit. So let's talk a little bit about Jeremiah. Who is he? He was not a bullfrog. He's not a friend of mine. Jeremiah was a prophet in the Old Testament. Actually, more is written about Jeremiah in the scriptures than any other prophet. We know more about him. He's considered to be the author of much of the book of Jeremiah, which you can see in the Old Testament, as well as the book of Lamentations. And he was a guy who was a prophet, and his time working as a prophet spanned the reign of five different kings. He began with Josiah, ended with Zedekiah, which means he was one of the major prophets in Israel for between 30 and 40 years. And it was a time of great crisis because he was doing it in a time right around when Babylon was conquering the nation, which means around 630 to 585 BC was when he was a prophet. Now, that might not mean a whole lot to you because we don't really have prophets in the same way today. So a prophet in Israel, in most nations, and particularly to Israel, there would be multiple prophets in any given kingdom. And so they tended to serve the king. They were advisors to the king. They were a voice for the people in the corridors of power. But most importantly, they were supposed to be God's voice and representative to instruct and call people into obedience, to a right relationship with God. They sometimes would have words of prophecy where God would tell them about things that were coming. Here's what's coming in the near future. But here's where we run into a problem, because since most kings had multiple prophets, they would sometimes get multiple messages because not all the prophets were tied into what God was saying. And so in Jeremiah's case, he had a particularly difficult job because his messages were primarily about God's judgment, the fact that the people needed to stop living these horribly wicked lives and move in God's direction. In fact, he was called the weeping prophet because of the way he saw the world and all the things he wrote. And as you might expect, his words are not always well received. King's kind of like, stay away from me. I got other people telling me stuff I'd rather hear. And all the other prophets were more welcome. But what I want to focus on this morning is how it all started for Jeremiah, because it was a difficult ministry that he had for all those years. But it all started, and it's recorded in Jeremiah chapter 1. So let me put the verses up on the screen. And I want you to read along with me. We're going to start in verse 4. The word of the Lord came to me, saying, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations." And then Jeremiah responds. He says, "Alas, sovereign Lord, I don't know how to speak. I'm too young." But the Lord said to me, "Don't say, 'I'm too young.' You must go to everyone I send you to and say whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you and I will rescue you, declares the Lord." And then the Lord reached out his hand and he touched my mouth and he said to me, "I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I will appoint you over nations and kingdoms to uproot and tear down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant." People call this Jeremiah's commissioning. Most scholars think he was probably in his late teens when this happened. And what I want to do, I want to make four observations that I see in this invitation that God has to Jeremiah, and then see why that would matter to us. So let me go through this. Here's the first one. You see right away that Jeremiah was appointed to a specific purpose. The whole thing starts off saying, "Hey, before I formed you, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart and I appointed you." So God is basically coming to Jeremiah and he's telling him four things. He starts off by saying, "Hey, I formed you." That's the first thing. And the word actually means to fashion. It's like the same word would refer to designing a house or doing a sculpture or making a statue. There's this idea of Jeremiah was no accident. God said, "Look, I knew you, where you were born, what you were like, everything about you. God, I plan." And then he says, "I knew you." Well, this is more than just a friendly knowledge. This is the deep down in every respect, I know who you are. It's the idea of close personal relationship and protection. Like God was saying, "I'm invested in you. I care about you." Then he tells him, "I set you apart." And this is really the idea of setting aside, of making holy. It means that God put his stamp on him for something. Now, it's kind of like, I was thinking about that this week. It's kind of like when my wife, Yvonne, makes a banana cake. It's like my favorite thing. And she doesn't make it very often because it's not very good for me. And it's a lot of work. But when she does, I'm all excited. Then she says, "Well, no, this isn't for us. We're taking it to a gathering," which is always disappointing because I would rather just keep it at home. So what I do to make sure that I get some is I always take a piece and I set it aside so that there's at least one piece that no matter what happens, it's mine. And that's the idea in some ways that God is expressing to Jeremiah. He's like, I picked you. I pulled you out. I took you as mine. And then the last thing he tells him was, "I appointed you." He was to be appointed to be a prophet to the nations, which basically means he was going to speak on God's behalf, not just to Israel, but all to the surrounding nations as well. So hear what I'm saying. God's message to Jeremiah was that your entire life, Jeremiah, is rooted in my purposes. Now, second thing I noticed was what our response often is, which is this: Jeremiah felt inadequate. He says, "Alas, I don't know how to speak. I'm too young." He felt completely inadequate and incompetent. If he was to rate this scale of 1 to 10, okay, Jeremiah, where do you fit? He'd be like, "I'm a 1, God." He's not that he can't talk, but he says, "Look, I have no experience in this. I have no innate ability here." Who knows? He might have been an introvert that didn't want to speak out loud. He had no reference for what he wanted to say. It was this thing that God is asking him was way too big. And in reality, his objection was absolutely correct. He couldn't do it on his own. And even though God had already said to Jeremiah, "Look, I made you, your life has a purpose, you're rooted in me," he still feels very uncertain. And so God tells Jeremiah two more things that were supposed to carry him through the next 40 years of ministry. And I think they're really strategic and key for us as well. Here's the first: is that God's authority is what determined Jeremiah's adequacy, not Jeremiah's competence. See, the Lord said to him, he said, don't say I'm too young. You go where I'm going to send you and you say what I command you. And it's like God is referring, saying to Jeremiah, look, I understand your objections. I get it. But you can act in confidence. And it's not because you have any great ability or talents, but because I'm sending you. Your authority, this whole task, this thing that I'm giving you to do is based in my character, not your skills. So you don't have to be afraid. He uses two terms. He says, I send and I command. I want you to go where I send you, and I want you to say what I command you. And the emphasis here is God's sending and God's commanding. So I thought, what does that look like? And actually, again, I thought of it in terms of children. If you have a couple of kids and you have a teenager, but then the youngest, you know, maybe an eight-year-old, and this brother goes to his older brother and says, you got to come to dinner. And the older brother's like, you can't tell me what to do. I don't have to come. And then he says those magic words, Dad said, you got to come. And in that moment, it doesn't matter how old the younger child is or his size or anything else. He's communicating on behalf of someone who does have authority and can make it stick. And God is reinforcing this for Jeremiah because at the end of this, he says, look, he reached out his hand and he touched my mouth and said, look, I've put words in your mouth and they're going to be powerful. I'm going to actually appoint you over nations. You're not just going to be a preacher. You're going to speak words that influence entire kingdoms. And Jeremiah, when you speak what I tell you to speak, it's going to come to pass. Judgments to break down, promises to build up. Not because of you, Jeremiah, you're too young. And that's quite honestly the point, but because God is powerful. It's like he's saying, Jeremiah, let me worry about what happens. You just be faithful. And that brings us to the last thing I noticed about Jeremiah in this. Is that Jeremiah's confidence then was supposed to be based on God's presence. He says, don't be afraid of them. And by them, he's talking about the kings, the people who weren't going to receive his message very well. He says, for I am with you and will rescue you. Jeremiah, you can be faithful because I'm with you. My presence is what matters. Now, when I first read this, I thought God was lying. Because let me tell you a little bit about Jeremiah's life. He was called the weeping prophet because he was continually communicating all this bad news. And as a result, this is his life. He was plotted against multiple times. They wanted to kill him a variety of times. He served multiple kings who hated him, didn't want anything to do with him. He was beaten by one of the head priests, one of the religious leaders, put in the stocks and humiliated. The other priests and prophets attempted to put him to death. He was put in prison. Then when he came out of prison, he tried to warn King Zedekiah what was going on. And he spends all this energy writing everything down in a scroll, and the king just tosses it all in the fire. He says, I don't want to listen to it. Then he's beaten. He's put in prison again, this time for quite a long time, in a dungeon, and threatened to take his life. He's finally released from prison, but he's trying to encourage the people, hey, you need to surrender to the Babylonians, which went contrary to what the king wanted. So he's thrown into the cistern. He would have died if someone hadn't interceded on his behalf and then lifted him out of this muddy pit. And to top it all off, he had to live in Jerusalem while there was a famine. There was nothing to eat, and eventually captured by the Babylonians. And in the end, he's forcibly taken by his fellow countrymen to Egypt, away from his home, even though he had no desire to do so. And as far as we know, he lived and died in Egypt as Babylon swept in and destroyed the nation. And I thought, you know, from one perspective, it does not look like God lived up to his end of the bargain. He said, look, don't worry about it because I'll deliver you. And I'm thinking, that doesn't sound like a life of deliverance. That sounds like a life frequented by problems and trouble. But if I take a different perspective, it means that despite the difficulties of life, the difficult task, the things that were going on, God always provided a way for Jeremiah when he needed it. So God tells Jeremiah, hey, let your life, let me own your life. And I'll be with it. I will watch over you. Now, this whole calling to Jeremiah is specific to him. God was calling him to be a prophet to Israel, and we're not. I mean, this is not, these words are not directed to us. So what do we learn that applies from all this? What can we take from this invitation that God made to Jeremiah to be this prophet to the nations that would benefit us? And quite frankly, it follows the same line of thinking. The first is this: you have a unique purpose. Most of us know intellectually that we're unique people. We know about fingerprints, right? Everybody has different fingerprints, right? They're all different. But did you know that your tongue, your teeth, your iris, your retina, even your heartbeat are all utterly unique to you. Nobody else has it. They're actually talking about technology now that can read people's heartbeats from hundreds of yards away using lasers, and they can identify people because every heartbeat is unique. You're unique. And that doesn't even take into account your unique personality, your life experiences, your life story, and all those other things. But it's not simply, if we just rested there, then it's a feel-good thing. Hey, I'm unique. I'm special. Nobody else is like me. That's true. But this isn't just about feeling better about yourself. You also have a unique purpose that God has assigned to you in this time and this place. He knows you. He designed you before you were even, before you were even conceived. He knew everything about you. You all know this. We've talked about it before, but it means that he made you the way he wanted to make you because you are set up for a purpose that's bigger than yourself. The vast majority of us, honestly, are not called to be prophets or even leaders of large organizations or famous teachers. But that means that in the midst of being at home, of being quarantined, of riding out this pandemic, and then in the time that follows, there are certain things that only you can do. Relationships that only you have. Passions that you feel uniquely different from everybody else. Opportunities that will be there for nobody else. Who you are designed to be. See, it doesn't start when you're an adult. God had already designed Jeremiah before he ever became a prophet. And it doesn't end when we retire. He says, no, you have a unique purpose. But God will put you in places where you feel inadequate. He will put you in places where you don't feel up to the challenge, where you say, I can't do this. I am not ready for this. Now, he does this not because he wants you to feel uncomfortable. That's not the point. He wants you and me to trust him. He desires that we rely on him. And so when he puts us in those places where we say, look, I can't say that. I don't know that person well enough. I'm not sure what to say. I don't know how to do this. I couldn't pray for that person in public. I couldn't do that. You know what? I can't even afford my own groceries. I can't do that for other people. I can't give that money. Remember, he designed you for those places. And he wants you to lean into him and into that feeling of inadequacy. The reason we can do that is because when we follow Jesus, we are operating from God's authority. Now, here's why this matters, because this is kind of one of those concepts that's hard to get our hand around and head around in any way that's meaningful. But what it really means is this. Faithfulness is the measuring stick we have more than results. See, when we feel inadequate, it's almost always tied to results. We don't feel adequate for something because it doesn't turn out for us the way we think it should. Or we don't feel adequate because other people are doing it better. We don't feel adequate because what's being asked is more than we have and we would fail. We feel inadequate because the things that we're seeing in our kids or in our job are not what we thought they should be. We tie our adequacy to the results of what we do. But that's not God's measuring stick. And what he told Jeremiah, what he tells us is, look, you can be faithful. And the nice part is you get to decide how faithful you are. You don't get to choose your results. You don't get to choose how things happen, why, what the results of your actions are. But what you do get to choose is to follow. We get to choose to be fearless because of who stands behind us. We actually get to choose to obey. And it makes me realize that we can live the verse that says, hey, if God is for us, well, then who can be against us? Now, in all of this, it's not necessarily easy. It might be uncomfortable. But I think the last promise and the one that he gave Jeremiah, which is the one he gives to us, is so extraordinarily helpful. And it's simply this, that God has promised you his presence. I think sometimes we desire the benefits of Jesus more than we desire Jesus himself. Because really, when it comes right down to it, we don't want trouble or problems or conflict or issues. Most of us are sitting home saying, okay, we just got to get done this. Like, let's get past the end of this quarantine. I don't like being at home anymore. Let's get back to normal. Let's get back to life the way it was. I don't like dealing with things the way they are. It's frustrating. I have worries. I'd like to be able to start getting back into making money, having a routine, and all those things. We want all those things. And that's fine. But I wonder what God is doing in the midst of this. Because you realize he never promised us smooth sailing, but he did promise that regardless of what happens, just like he did with Jeremiah, he said, I will walk alongside you through everything. And by the way, while I'm doing that, keep your eyes open, because I've got a bigger purpose in here than just surviving till you can go back to normal. I heard this week that the church is one of those, call it an institution, if you will, that is uniquely positioned in this coronavirus environment. Because the church, above all institutions, doesn't live for the welfare of their people, but lives for the welfare of others. And that means each and every one of you individually, and all of us together, have a purpose that's bigger than us. And so our confidence in all this is not based on the results we have, but on his presence. So, wherever you are this morning, in your house, wherever God has put you, and whatever you are doing, whatever he's got in front of you for today and the week ahead, know that a God is abundantly sufficient for you to accomplish your purpose. He's uniquely set you up, and even if you don't feel adequate or confident, you have his authority and his presence with you. God has appointed you and me to make a difference. No follower of Jesus anywhere exists merely to make an honest living, have a family, enjoy retirement, and die. Every one of us has a purpose bigger than ourselves. And together as a church, our purpose is bigger than anyone's purpose on their own. May we be people who remember that God has uniquely placed us, is walking beside us, and has equipped us for the things that he's asked